Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, hour two is here. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where the number always is 888-914-9149. Please feel free to use that number right now because there are some lines open. Amazingly, 888-914-9149. We'll go first to Joe in Doylestown. Good morning, Joe. Welcome.
Patrick, hey, first order of business, have you ever sang Achy Breaky Heart to Cyrus?
Never have, never will.
Okay, because if you did, I would have musically disowned you. I just want to let you know that.
Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, what kind of coffee are you drinking this morning, Joe? Because I want a cup of whatever you're on right now. It's got to be good.
I'm this way naturally. In fact, I just drink decaf. That's it. It's just, I don't need coffee.
I guess not. Wow.
It's a blessing and a curse. So, Patrick, I'm having a discussion with a fellow on YouTube, and we both want the reductions of abortion, right? However, he's against imposing abortion through legislation and believes it will not reduce abortions in the long run. He claims in the 60s there was a big backlash politically and also against the church and affiliated organizations. This was in Quebec. And he says it almost caused a complete rejection of the church and says that Quebec today is one of the most secular anti-clerical societies in the world. So
that's true.
He suggests more energy. Yeah, he suggests less energy being pushed through legislation and more sensible grassroots education, and believes abortions will become more rare when a woman will be convinced to avoid them. I believe in that part. I think we need both. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would concur with you, Joe. I think that it's a both and, not an either or. And I've heard this theory before that, gee, if only you just kind of back off on the whole Supreme Court and legislation issue and just win people's hearts over. It looks good on paper, and there is a place for that, I don't doubt. But in the meantime, unborn children are being killed left, right, and center. So there is a certain urgency about this that precludes, in my view, just simply saying, well, let's lay off of the legislative or judicial side of things and just hope for the best, hope we can convince people. I think that that's a real long shot. And maybe, Joe, if I were in your situation, what I might do is I would juxtapose the issue of slavery with abortion and just say, well, let's go back to 1860, just before the Civil War. What would you have said? You can ask this of your friend. What would you have said to somebody who said, you know what, this whole slavery thing, I agree with you, it's bad, but don't you think it would just be better if we didn't worry about, like, you know, electing presidents who say that they would end slavery? We certainly don't want to go to war over this. We don't want people to lose their lives over this. So what if we just ease up on the legislative and judicial side of things, and let's just see if we can win the slave owners' hearts over little by little? That's going to really pay off in due time. Ask your friend if he would say that would have been a good thing to do in light of the millions of people who are enslaved in dire circumstances. What do we say to them? Well, just wait long enough, and eventually maybe we can win over the heart of your slave owner. Or should we be taking decisive action to end slavery? And before people start up and sending me emails, but Patrick, it was about states' rights. It wasn't about slavery. I know the story of the Civil War, and it was very much about states' rights, but the states' rights issues were predicated upon the state's ability to have slavery. Anyways, Joe, you might want to try that with him and see what he says about that. I have a feeling he probably would say, well, in that case, we really couldn't just wait and hope that we would win over the slave owners' minds and hearts. We had to take action because you have people who are living and dying in slavery, and that's wrong, and we should do something to stop it. That'd be another interesting thought experiment.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I didn't think of that, so I'll put that in my quiver. You know, one of the things that stuck out on this thing is Ronald Reagan. He once said to his advisors, he says, "Don't bring me any political reason to override what is moral and what is best for the interests of the people." I, you know, to me, I don't think it's a good idea to, you know, compromise on moral issues in fear of losing some parishioners. But yeah, that's me.
I agree. No, I do agree. Well, thank you, Joe. Right, interesting conversation. You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Let's do it again sometime. 888-914-9149. How about Rita now in La Mirada, California? Rita, may I say to you, when I was a kid, there was a physician who saved my life. I was about 6 months old. You ready for this? I was about 6 months old, and one day I was just crying and crying and crying and crying, and I wouldn't stop crying to the point where I was screaming. And my poor mother had no idea what was wrong with me. Don't worry, there's a payoff here for you, Rita. Just be patient with me. She brings me in to the doctor or the emergency room, and there was a doctor there who quickly diagnosed the fact that I had some perforation in my lungs due to, I don't know, there was some pneumonia or something like that. And what was happening is every time I would inhale, some of that air would stay in my chest cavity. And when I exhaled, it wasn't all leaving. So I was inflating like a little balloon. So he figured out what was going on with me. And without even telling my mom anything, he took a scalpel and he rubbed alcohol on my side. And he punctured me between the ribs. And my mom said it was like a balloon popping. And all this air came out. And that was the first step in saving my life. He told her, he says, if you hadn't brought him into the emergency room, he probably would have been dead within an hour. Me. So all of this to say, Rita, that doctor had his practice in La Mirada, California. And for years afterward, he was our family pediatrician. We had to drive a long way to get there. How's that for a story that you weren't expecting? Rita in La Mirada, California.
I'm actually amazed. That's awesome. God is good.
Thank you for putting up with all that. Indeed he is. And he was a Jewish doctor too.
No worries.
My mom and dad were, he was a Jewish doctor, and he was, as far as they were concerned, the only doctor in the world, and because of what he did for me and for our family. So anyway, that's my little La Mirada story. Let's get to what you want to talk about.
Oh, wow. Well, hello. Good morning. My question is what is your view on the, I'm saying his name right, Shia LaBeouf, and mm-hmm. His talk. My husband and I finally sat down last night. We watched the whole thing, and we kind of like this morning looked at each other and were like, "Well, we hope that it's true, that his conversion is true." But what is your take on it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know why I feel this way, except that I am not skeptical. I don't doubt his sincerity. I don't really know anything about him. I just know he's been in some really bad movies. Been in some movies that were good, but couple that I won't mention that I never saw, but I know they were bad and they were essentially pornographic. Now, the director of the Padre Pio movie that he's in is also a porn movie director. And I read a couple of interviews with him and he just turned my stomach. And I'm talking about the director. So there are things about all this that make me a bit queasy. So I'm hopeful that his conversion is sincere, and I'm also hopeful that it will last, but I don't know. I really don't know, and it's not for me to know. I can just say, well, welcome home. God bless you. I hope this is a permanent change in your life, and it'll depend, I guess, now on what kind of career choices he makes, what kind of roles he accepts, and whether or not he amends his life. It doesn't sound like he's led a very wholesome life up to this point, but maybe that'll change. Who knows? And I hope it does. Those are my thoughts.
Very good. We were just kind of feeling the same way. Like, is he acting? Is this for the movie? Is this, you know, in my heart, I want to believe that, you know, if St. Paul can be converted, have this great conversion story, and including myself to have a conversion story, why couldn't he? But I just, I'm kind of like you, skeptical, but I want to believe that some of the disciples just pray for him. He needs a lot of strength, he needs a lot of prayer. So that's my take.
Yes. Yeah, I would share that same view. Now, when you watched whatever it is that you watched, I guess it was an interview or something, what was it about it that made you feel skeptical, if that's the right word for it? Was it something he said or just his background, or why did it strike you that way?
I think it was because I don't know a lot about him. Like you said, just a little bit. I think what struck me is the voice of let go, of just let go of everything, just surrender everything to God. Just let me take control of you at this point. You stop, you step to the back, and let me take control. Because I feel like something in my life that happened where it was just let go. I mean, you're holding on to all this anger, bitterness, or hurt. Just let go. And that struck a chord with me, like, wow. He felt that same way too. Is it real? I don't know. So, but I know what's real for me.
One of the things that struck me was that there seemed to be a bit of a, people were, some Catholics anyway, were in this a bit of a tizzy, like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, look, he's Catholic now. You know, they were tingling. And there was sort of this rush to capitalize, not in a financial way, but capitalize on his announcement of converting to the Catholic Church. And one of the dangers, I've seen this happen before, Rita, maybe you have too. One of the dangers is that when somebody converts to the Catholic faith and becomes a quote-unquote celebrity for that reason, it doesn't always go very well for that person. You know, if they're gaining adulation in book deals and things that are based upon the fact that they converted, often it can have a corrosive effect on that person. And what I tend to advise would be, if you're coming into the Catholic Church, just be Catholic for a while. Just be Catholic. Go to Mass, plug in at your parish, live the Catholic faith, learn what it means, and do that for a long time before you presume to start telling other people about the Catholic faith. Now, St. Paul, of course, didn't fit that pattern. He began telling other people right away after his conversion. So there are always exceptions to the rule. But as a general principle, it seems to me that the celebrification of people who become Catholic is not ultimately good for them unless they're really prepared to handle it. So that's another dimension of this that I thought about.
That seems to be, I don't know. I stayed silent for years, just very quietly sat at the back and just, you know, just let the cross pull me forward and let Jesus do what he was going to do. But I agree with that. I think slow down your pace a little bit and just wait and see, like the silence. Be in the silence of the moment and then see where it takes you. And when the movie happens, it happens and so forth. But I was just curious, and my husband and I were both talking about it this morning. I go, you know, I'm going to call and ask. I didn't think I was going to get through, but thank you for taking my call.
Oh, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. Well, stay safe on the roads or wherever you are right now. And let's offer some sincere, heartfelt prayers for this man, that God will give him the courage of conviction, and that, you know, as Jesus talks about the sower of the seed, some seed fell on shallow, rocky soil, and it couldn't grow because there wasn't much depth to it. So let's pray that the seed, in his case, has fallen on deep, rich soil where it can really take root and flourish. Thanks, Rita. Very interesting conversation. Let's go to Dana now in Roseville, California. Dana, I understand it was like 117 degrees the other day in Roseville, California. What was that like?
Oh, it was rough. It was rough. We're happy we're seeing some cool off for sure. So, well, thank you for having me on. A few minutes ago, you had a caller on that was speaking about his friend he was conversing with about abortion. And a couple of weeks ago, I was driving past the abortion clinic that's near our home. And my family, when we go by, I always have the kids say Hail Mary or Memorari. And this one day, it just overwhelmed me about the reality of what's happening there every day when we go by. And a couple of years ago, we were watching that movie, Band of Brothers, again. And there's a scene in there that just really overwhelmed me with emotion, which was the scene where the prisoners of Auschwitz are being freed. And it's obviously, we all know the history of how horrible it is. And I just remember seeing when they had the people who lived in the town where the concentration camp was walk through the camp.
And they forced them. And the liberators forced the local people to get out of their houses and go to the camps and see what was right there next door to them that they were trying to ignore. That's a powerful scene.
Yeah, man, woman, and child. And they had ashes from these bodies that were being incinerated and all that falling upon their town. And it wasn't a little bit. And so I just started realizing the shame and the horror of it, that these people were faced with that reality. And I thought, gosh, is there going to be a day where we, each and every one of us, needs to have the shame of that reality and answer the question of what did I do? And it goes back to that, you know, the three little monkeys with their hands over their eyes and their ears and their mouth. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And so I just thought that's a closer example for people. We all recognize the Holocaust was so terrible. And to recognize that, let's not be those people that were right next to this concentration camp as that death was happening, and not ignore it, but to really step up and do something. And I encourage people to just appeal to your conscience and maybe watch that scene from the Band of Brothers movie and really reconcile that against the reality that we face today with the abortion clinics in all of our cities.
Yep.
So that's all I wanted to share, just because it really was overwhelming.
Yeah, I could see why. And I had the same reaction when I saw, I've seen that series probably four or five times now over the years. And it's really powerful, no doubt about it. Well, thanks for sharing that, Dana.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Break time? I think so. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back to your phone calls. We have a line or two open. If you call now, we can get you on the air with your question or comment. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's take a quick time out and we'll be right back.
I got a fever and the only prescription is more
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid, come on!
This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. Back in a big way. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. As the lady just said, my number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Raymond wrote to me, listening in Chicago on 950 AM. He says, hello, Patrick. You recently wondered whether St. Joseph had a private area and what the house looked like. This is a call that I took last week about man caves. Did you know that it has been found and excavated? Likewise, the stone thrown at that Pilate sat The stone throne that Pilate sat when he judged Jesus has been excavated, the site of the most dramatic moment in human history. Yet when I tell someone this response, it is, wow, or that can't be, or it would be common knowledge. The secularists are good at hiding things. My source is a very well-researched book called Is Atheism Dead? I don't think the author is Catholic, but he looks at historical evidence, intelligent design, logic, etc. Thank you for your show. Well, it just so happens, and I appreciate your email, Raymond, just so happens that the secularists are not hiding anything. They're not trying to hide anything. And the house that you're referring to, I'm pretty confident, is the Holy House of Loretto. And that is it's purported to be a miracle, and it may well be a miracle, in which the house that the Holy Family lived in Nazareth was miraculously transported to Italy. And the house is there, and it's, you know, very simple, and I am well aware of it. It's been known for hundreds and hundreds of years, so the secularists are not hiding this, and it's right out there in plain sight. Many people visit this location in Italy when they make a pilgrimage there. So I'm also aware of these excavations that are underway, especially in the temple area in Jerusalem, and more things are being discovered that comport with the biblical account. So that is also absolutely true, and I'm glad that you're aware of it too. Thanks for writing to me. I appreciate that. Let's go now to Christy in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Good morning, Christy. Welcome.
Good morning. I tried calling last week when you had a woman on talking about taking the Lord's name in vain in a movie, and if that's something that would be okay. Obviously, and it's just me, it's a complete no-brainer. These days you can go online, see a movie, and if it says language, you can see if it literally is going to take God's name in vain. Absolutely not. Like, nothing in your life is going to be added or lost by not seeing said movie, in my opinion.
I agree. I agree.
I would think it would be God's opinion as well. I mean, I've got up and walked out of movie theaters that I didn't know, and that should be something that we as Christians and Catholics just don't stand for, and it's so hard with the older family members or the young adult children and nieces and nephews, and they will have big group chats and texts about, like, Father Stewie. Like, that was, I wanted to see that so bad, but God's name was just thrown around like it was nothing. And we even had a priest in on the conversation who sort of said, no, it's okay because it's for context. And I'm like, what? Like, I just don't wrap my head around that. But now we have this Padre Pio movie coming out. And while it doesn't take God's name in vain, apparently there's quite a lot of the F-bomb, I think they call it, these days, that are being thrown around. And I'm trying to think of one review. If Padre Pio apparently would swear in confession when he'd get angry with someone, which he very well may have, I don't know. So what would be your opinion if, I know, like I said, I know it's not the Lord's name in vain in Padre Pio, but is that something you would still go or encourage your children to go see? Because I love Padre Pio. But I know there's one scene where a soldier is yelling, and he's yelling the F-bomb at these Christians to get out. And what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I understand. So I feel much like you do, where I don't like, first of all, I consider that to be a form of verbal violence when people use, you know, especially when it's intentional and they use that kind of profanity. I don't like it. I don't like to hear it. I never use it, and I don't want to be around people who do. So I understand where you're coming from on that issue. I do also recognize that there are times in movies, for example, where it is, you know, some of these things are there and they're very gratuitous. They don't need to be there. It doesn't help the movie at all. It doesn't make it a better, stronger movie. It doesn't make it any more realistic than it would have been had they not used that. So I have a certain tolerance up to a point, but, you know, it's a rather low threshold. And if it's just nonstop swearing, and I too have just, Nancy and I have just turned movies off, like, oh, this looks good, let's watch this. And we get 5 or 10 minutes into it and it's just profanity, we just turn it off. Because like you, I feel the same way. My life is not in any way enhanced by sitting through that if I can avoid it. So all of the above being the case, what about this movie? I haven't read any reviews about it, but I've read an interview with the director of the movie, and the guy just, it sounds like a really gross kind of person. And his background is filming porn movies. And I don't mean like art porn. I mean porn movies. I never heard of this guy before. I don't know anything about what he's done before. But when I read the interview and the article talking about this new Padre Pio movie, he doesn't sound to me like he's reformed. You know, it doesn't sound to me like he has had a conversion. Maybe this is just the next project. Hell, let's do something on Padre Pio. So the source, in terms of the director of this movie, was just gross. And I, for that reason alone, I'm probably not going to see it. I don't really have any interest in it, quite frankly. And the other issue is this celebrification of the actor. And I, as I said a little while ago, you probably heard me talk about this on the program today. I mean, I really do welcome him home to the Catholic Church. If this is a genuine conversion, wonderful. And we just heard the reading about the prodigal son, didn't we? At Mass on Sunday. And, you know, we should not resent the return of those who were prodigals. We should celebrate it and put a ring on his finger and a cloak on his back and let's kill the fatted calf, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't want to think that this may not be a for real conversion. And others have said, well, notice that he's doing the publicity tour for this movie. What better way to get a lot of publicity among Catholics than to, I mean, that's a kind of a cynical take on this issue. I don't hold that view, but other people have raised that issue. So since I don't know, all I can do is just pray for him, hope and assume that this is a genuine conversion, and pray for him that it is, and hope that this new sort of burst of celebrity in the Catholic world doesn't harm his nascent Catholic faith. That would really be a negative thing. But as far as going to see the movie, no, I don't have any plans to see it. And that was part of my decision not to, because of the description of St. Padre Pio using the F word, which I have a real hard time imagining that he did. It, you know, it's not impossible, but it just doesn't seem in keeping with his holy life and in virtue, etc. Now, you mentioned the Father Stu movie. I got myself into a little bit of, it seems like I got into a bit of hot water, because not that long ago, Christy, I had the privilege of visiting Helena, Montana, which is where he lived. And there were plenty of people there who knew him and were telling me all these wonderful stories about what a great priest he was. And I was very edified by all that. But everything I had heard about the movie, which I have not seen, is that it's just filled with F-bombs from here to kingdom come. And I just don't want to sit through that. And maybe he talked that way. Okay, fine, whatever. I don't want to sit through that. I'm not interested in hearing that, especially if it's coming from a priest and they said, yeah, but he changed and he didn't do that after. Okay, all right, that's fine. But I just don't want to sit through that. I really don't. So when I mentioned that, I think there were some people in Helena, Montana who they didn't look kindly upon that point of view of mine, but that's my take on the whole thing. So, I mean, they're understandably proud of him and proud of his story, and I can see why. And I don't quibble with that. But at the same time, I don't feel the need to sit through that.
Zero need. Exactly. I agree. No, I agree. And you should really watch that interview though with Shia LaBeouf and Bishop Barron. Even though I won't say anything about that. But it is truly, and I think of like Father Don Calloway and other people that have had a saint last week that killed his pregnant wife. I mean, there can be true conversion. And I pray for Shia, and I hope that you really should watch it. It's really good. It's beautiful to hear what he has to say about the faith now. So,
yeah, and I'm so happy about that.
Yeah, but you should watch it. It's really, and I pray that it's true. And like I said, like you say, St. Paul, it is possible. And what he has to say about the traditional Catholic Mass and all just is, I don't know. It seems real to me. I've watched it several times because it is so beautiful to hear him.
Fair enough.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Thank you. Have a blessed day.
You got it. Appreciate that. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Diane in Phoenix. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So, Patrick, I have a quick question. I'm recently hungry for my faith and learning. I just made a trip to Fatima in Portugal, and it was the most pronounced. It was just beautiful. It was amazing. I can't say it enough, but I definitely have the drive for the Blessed Mother, and she's appeared to me in dreams, and it's just been beautiful in my journey. My question is this. I do pray the rosary every morning in my car on my way to work. I take that as my time, my reflecting time, my alone time. There's no interruptions. I'm just listening and praying, and it's heartfelt. Mm-hmm. I do have coffee, and I do have a Danish in a napkin, you know, as I'm driving. But is it wrong? Sometimes I feel guilty for sipping on my coffee or taking a poke at my Danish. And who better than to clarify this? And, you know, if I'm feeling it's wrong, maybe it is wrong.
Well,
you can clarify that for me.
You're talking about praying the rosary in your car while you're driving to work, and you're sipping on your coffee while you're praying the rosary while you're driving to work. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. I've been there. I've done that. So I've asked myself the same question. And the way I handled this was I said, however long ago it was, it's really not appropriate for me to be sipping coffee while I'm praying the rosary, because if I were kneeling in my home praying the rosary or kneeling in a church praying the rosary, I wouldn't be sipping coffee. So for me personally, what I did was I just said, while I'm praying the rosary, and I often do pray the rosary while I'm in my car, I'm just not going to sip coffee. I'm going to pray, and then when I'm done, then I'll sip coffee. Now, I don't think that I committed a sin. I don't think you're committing a sin, but I think if you consider to whom you're addressing your prayers, God himself, of course, and also asking Our Lady to intercede for you, I'll bet you that, let's say that you were the recipient of a private revelation. So let's say that the next big apparition like Fatima happens in Phoenix, and you are the one that Our Lady appears to. I have a feeling that if during the apparition, while you're conversing with Our Lady, you're probably not going to reach over and grab your Yeti cup and have a sip of coffee while you're talking to her. That's kind of how I looked at this myself. You know, so for me, it was just really simple. It's just a little tweak. That's all. Lord, I don't want to do anything that would be unseemly or less respectful. And I realize that by sipping coffee while I'm praying, I mean, there's nothing sinful about it. You're not doing something actively wrong. It just seems to be less appropriate. And so for me, it was a really simple thing. For the next 15, 20 minutes, I'm not going to sip coffee. I'll drink the coffee before or I'll drink it after, but I won't drink it during. So that's how I handled it. Just a little tweak.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for, you know, I had to hear it from Patrick. If it felt wrong, I guess I should have gone with one of those things, go with your gut instinct, you know. But thank you. I really appreciate you taking my call and answering my question, Patrick.
You're welcome, Diane. And next time you pray the rosary, please remember me and your intentions. We would sure appreciate that, all of us here at Relevant Radio. Thank you. Let's go now to Mark in Alvin, Texas. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Alvin. I mean, hey, Alvin. Patrick.
That happens all the time. People get confused about who they are and who I am. But that's okay, Mark. We're good.
Just a comment. At 68 years old, I've been listening to your show a little bit this morning, at 68 years old, and trying to get close to God for the last 30 or 40 years, daily mass, prayer in the rosary. The older I get, the sillier and the stupider the whole idea of celebrity comes to me. And I just thought that'd be a comment to make. The whole idea, not that you can't admire somebody for being a good singer or a dancer or an actor or a speaker, but to put them up on this pedestal, the whole idea is just so stupid. I don't see how people keep on doing it.
Well, my take on that is that people, you know, from time immemorial, they want people to look up to. And, you know, let's face it, if you're good at sports or music or whatever, and you gain prominence and people buy tickets and they buy your records and things, you just naturally gain prominence and people will look to you. The strange thing is that to look to a sports figure for like moral advice, or to look to a singer or a band or something, as if, even though they can play music really well and sing really well, as if somehow they have a lock on what life is all about, it seems to me pretty foolish to look to them for things like that. But I understand what you're saying. We live in a time now where people are famous for being famous and not much else. And it really is kind of silly in some ways. Some people are genuine celebrities. Take a look at, for example, the late Queen of England. She was truly a celebrity, but I think she had a reason, a solid basis for why so many people loved her and why so many people were saddened by her death, because she stood for something. Even though you may not agree with all of what it meant, her celebrity was not based upon some passing thing. And so there are some kind of celebrities that I think are appropriate, but to be a celebrity unto itself is ultimately meaningless. You know, can't take it with you.
Well, appreciate
anyway,
the show.
Those are my thoughts. Yeah. Appreciate your phone call. Thank you for that. We'll take a break and come right back to it. If you want to send me an email, just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on connect and send me an email. Maybe I'll read it on the air. I have a few more of those in store for you and your phone calls right after this. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
That guy is excited about the tacos. Yeah. I can see why. Good job, Cyrus. We do it in Mexico all the time. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Nello in Chisholm, Minnesota. Hello, Nello.
Hi. Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Happily.
Question. You're talking earlier about the excavating they're doing, like, in Jerusalem. You know, they uncover these buildings and all this different, you know, structures. My question is, do you know how these things get buried? I mean, how is it that suddenly you have buildings that are completely covered for, you know, 1,000 years.
Millennia.
How did it happen? Whatever. Yeah. How does that happen?
Well, let me give you some examples of what I know from personal experience to give you just a couple. So in Turkey, near the little, well, it's kind of a small city called Seljuk. It's where Ephesus was. So like St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians. That's the city. And when I visited there, it's the most amazing thing. You're in this fertile farmland, kind of this valley that is rich with farmland and crops and trees and all of the above. And when you get to the place where the ancient city of Ephesus once stood, the way they did it, I thought was very clever, because they bring you around to the entrance and you get out and you see this large, like the size of a football field, this large open area that's got a bunch of columns lying down on the ground and pieces of stone. And you can tell that there once were buildings here, but you really don't see much else. And then you start walking, you just keep walking and walking. And what happens is, as it starts to go over this little, it's not even really a hill, it just, the ground starts to slope down. And as you get to that point, suddenly this panoramic view of the ancient city of Ephesus comes into view, this broad boulevard with homes and shops and toilets and all kinds of things, big temples, a huge amphitheater where St. Paul actually preached in this very amphitheater. And the thing that's so amazing about it is this was all underground, was all covered by dirt. And it wasn't until maybe, and I forget exactly, but let's just say within the last 50, 60, 70 years, something like that, less than 100 years, I believe, they didn't even know where it was. They didn't know it was there. And maybe like a farmer was plowing the field and his plow hit something and they dig it up and, oh my gosh, that's a column. And they kept digging and digging. And this city, which is not even entirely excavated yet, is just monumental. And you realize this stuff was all there for all these hundreds and thousands of years in this case, and nobody knew about it. Well, maybe not thousands, but well over 1,000 at least. That's one. Another example would be Pompeii, which was covered, and Herculaneum, which were covered by the volcanic ash from the eruption of Mount Vesuvius around the year, when was that? 75, 70, somewhere in there. So those are some examples. In just outside of Rome, right on the coast of Rome, is a place called Ostia Antica. And Ostia Antica is, by the way, a place where St. Augustine was for a while, and he said goodbye to his mother there in Ostia Antica because it was the port city of Rome. Well, it was entirely covered by dirt, and it wasn't, again, until just recently in the 20th century that it was rediscovered and it was excavated, and it's this massive city. It's just amazing, and you can walk through the ruins. So to your point, those are three that I'm thinking of because I've been to each of these places. sometimes it's a natural occurrence that happens quickly, like volcano. In the case of Ephesus, what happened was the river that ran, well, I got to take a step back. Ephesus was a seaport city. It was on the water. In fact, you can see where the docks were, where the ships would line up to load and unload cargo. This is in the middle of a big farmland area, and the ocean is like maybe 10 miles to the west, something like that. And what the guide explained to us was that what happened was there was so much silt that was being brought in from this river that over time the silt basically filled in this harbor and covered up the city. So it was just this natural movement of dirt from the river, and you never would know that what you're looking at in terms of this valley was once this ocean harbor. So it happens that way as well. I don't claim to be an expert on such matters. I only know the things that I've seen personally and what's been explained to me. But I think that antiquity would show us so many things if we knew where they were, or if we could find them, if we excavated them, we would find amazing things that are under the dirt. And little by little, these things are coming to light. So those are my thoughts off the cuff.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the volcano part, I always thought, well, okay, that's certainly it would explain at least some of them, but yet that certainly didn't explain all of them. But now that you mention, I guess, the river and the silt and stuff, yeah, that makes more sense as to how suddenly you got an entire city covered.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, another example, if you go to Rome, if you ever go to Rome, I recommend that you go to the Basilica of San Clemente. And he is the Pope. He was the fourth bishop of Rome, successor of St. Peter. And he wrote a very important letter to the Corinthian church. This was around the year 90, give or take. It might have been a little bit earlier than that. So St. John the Apostle was still alive when St. Clement was the bishop of Rome. Now, when you go into the ground floor, this is, I think it's an 11th century church. That's the ground floor. And, I mean, this is ancient, ancient stuff. But you go down to the floor below that, which has been entirely excavated, and that's like 3rd century. And there's a church there that was built at that level. That was street level in those days. Well, you go down the level before that and you get to a Mithraic temple where they sacrificed bulls and did all the Mithraic ceremonies and things. And that's a whole floor below that 3rd century Christian Catholic church, essentially. And you go below that. And so the amazing thing is you go 3 floors down. That was ground level at that time. So I have the same astonishment. Like, well, what happened? I mean, why was that ground level then? And how did it happen that all this dirt and whatever else filled in over the top of it? And now why is ground level 30 feet above that? I do not know the answer to that question. I think an archaeologist could answer it. But I have been astonished by that kind of thing as well.
Hopefully one of them calls in. We'll be good.
That's right. You know, I used to subscribe to Biblical Archaeology. That's a periodical. It's still in print, as far as I know. And for years, I used to subscribe to it. And every single issue, it was a monthly. How they could keep that going indefinitely is amazing. But every issue, amazing things I would learn about archaeology, especially in the Holy Land. So if you wanted to pick up some back issues, I'm sure they're still around. You might be able to find some stuff there. So I found that helpful. Thanks, Nello. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Danielle in Florida. Good morning, Danielle. Welcome.
Whoop, whoop. Hi.
It's you.
How are you? Oh, I should not.
I'm well.
Okay.
You're doing the choo-choo train sound effect. I recognize it.
I am. Woo-woo. Woo-woo. There we go.
That will haunt me for years to come. Okay. Go ahead. I'm going to step out of your way, Danielle. You go ahead. I'll be quiet.
Okay. I'm volunteering at my local church, teaching CCD classes for children that are in like the third to kind of first, sixth grade. So in between the first communion and getting their confirmation. And so we're getting these kids and, you know, trying to see what resources I could follow to prepare them up and entertain them for that hour. So,
yeah, yeah. So I would suggest, and this is kind of old school. There are a lot of catechetical resources out there, but I'm a big fan of the Baltimore Catechism, St. Joseph Edition. And there are three volumes. They're still in print. Your local Catholic bookstore, if you have one there, can get it for you if they don't have it on the shelf. You can order it online. It's published by the Catholic Book Publishing Company. And I'm a real fan because they really do connect with the kids at the various ages. The youngest one has a pink cover, I believe it is, or maybe it's blue, and it's for First Communion level. And then the intermediate one, and then the one for the older students would be the gray cover with a picture of Jesus on the front saying, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life." I had these when I was a kid in grammar school. They really helped me. In fact, a lot of people say, how is it that you retained your Catholic faith growing up in the insanity of the 60s and the 70s? How did you stay Catholic when so many other people didn't? I honestly do believe that part of it, at least, was because I learned my faith from the Baltimore Catechism, St. Joseph edition, and it really made an impression on me. So for that reason, among others, I recommend it to other people. Now, that's not the only thing, and some people would say, well, that's very outdated. That's pre-Vatican II. Well, they've been updated, but they're just really effective. So perhaps if you started with that and see what the kids think, it's question and answer. It's got funny, or not funny, that's the wrong word. It's got interesting retro drawings from like the 1950s. A lot of things are very interesting just to look at. And I think maybe start there and see how the kids react to it.
Great. I did hear you mention that, and also Holy Heroes to one of the parents a couple of weeks ago. So that, okay, and I like what that website is showing for books. Okay.
Right. Yeah, they have some good resources right there. By the way, if you don't mind my asking, are you perchance from South Africa?
Oh, my word. Yes, I am. Cape Town, South Africa.
I thought so. Yeah, I thought so.
I would say at least 100 that gets it right.
Ah, well, I thought I detected your brogue, and I'm glad I'm right.
You're a legend in your own mind.
Ooh. Oh, that's just Cyrus. Don't worry about him. He's just having fun with his toys. That's all.
It sounds a little less creepier when I'm listening.
Good. I never should have said that. You're welcome, Danielle. Nice chatting with you. Yeah. Thanks, Cyrus. Appreciate that. Let's go to Irma now in Phoenix. Hello, Irma.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for getting my call, taking my call.
Happy
simple
to.
Question. Simple question. Okay. My son has asked me, is it a sin not to give money to somebody who asks for it when you are very tight on your budget and this person has been a persistent person to ask, no relations except conversations on phones. And I'll just leave it at that. I told him it's not a sin. I gave him a copy of the Ten Commandments. I said, of course, love is the biggest commandment of all. But if this person is constantly, constantly asking for money, there's plenty of agencies out there that'll help her in her situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree. But I'm reminded of what Jesus said in Matthew 5:42: give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. So there's that part as well. Now, I have a feeling that Jesus is referring to people who are truly disadvantaged, true poor people, people who had no way of living if they didn't receive alms from people who were generous to them. I don't know whether the Lord intended this to include people who could probably make it without getting a handout from your son, but are just persistent because they they think they can get money from him. He certainly wouldn't be doing anything wrong if he gave her some money, but he's under no obligation to do so, it doesn't seem to me.
Right, that's what I figured. So I basically said, because she constantly calls, and I said, well, just
what's her problem?
Don't answer that call.
Is she destitute? Is she on the streets?
No, she asks for stuff like money for Uber or help with rent. And it's just like, because she's a single mom, she has a baby, the daddy baby is in jail. I don't know if my son knows them from that, you know, through the boyfriend or the father of the child. Uh-huh. But it just seems that She's grasping for whatever she can. At one point, he gave her, you know, money out of the goodness of his heart when he had it, and then lost his job and went through his financial woes. But at this point, she's still sees trying him to get out of. And
yeah, so I'm just guessing she sees him as a soft touch. She knows she's gotten money from him before, therefore, okay. Yeah, this doesn't sound like it's a really deserving situation, and she may just be trying to exploit him. So I think, as you said, it's a simple question. I think my simple answer would be, if he sees red flags or you see the red flags, maybe the best thing to do is to say, you know, I was able to help you when I could, but now I can't. God bless you. And just leave it at that. And she'll get the idea.
That's what I told him. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Generosity is important, and we should be generous, and Jesus said to be generous. But there are times when people can abuse your generosity and actually exploit you in ways that are not good. And if you give them and give them and give them, you can be enabling that person to be more exploitative, and that's not good for that person either. So we have to be prudent and decide when is the right time to give generously and when is something happening that's really just exploitation. It's not always easy to tell, but be on the lookout for those red flags, like this man's mom, Irma, is seeing those red flags. All right. Well, a man's got to know his limitations.
Man's
I've learned that.
Know his limitations.
I hear that all the time. Those are the voices in Cyrus's head. These are the voices in Cyrus's head that speak to me now. I guess they're tired of talking to him. They're talking to me now. But that's okay. We're coming back with one more hour of the Patrick Madrid Show. So please don't go anywhere. I'll be right back right after this.